The Music Business Worldwide podcast is supported by Volley Music, a leading financial management platform for the music industry. Volley enables you to track expenses, approve invoices, and make payments 24/7, 365 days a year. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's VOLYmusic.com.
Hello and welcome to Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends podcast, which is supported once again by Volley Entertainment. My name is Tim Ingham. I'm the founder of Music Business Worldwide, and Talking Trends is where we dig behind a couple of recent entertainment industry headlines to give our view on what we think is really going on. I'm delighted once again to be joined by Los Angeles-based Charlie Datry, who's a consultant in his day-to-day life, but is also a music industry veteran, has done many great things across many great businesses. These days, he works across his own businesses, including Datry Songs, CC Music Royalties, and Best Quality M&M. The latter manages the IP of legacy artists. But Charlie, as I've said on this podcast many times, has previously worked for the likes of Def Jam and Columbia, as well as working for the company we now know as Disney Music Group for the best part of 20 years. Charlie, welcome back to Talking Trends. Before we came on here, we were having a brief discussion about Universal making up with TikTok following 3 months of not being particularly kind to one another. And I think that's led you this week to have some wider thoughts really about that situation, but also the precedent of what's been set in the past.
That's 100% true. And look, to a certain extent, I like to draw the line between distributors and creators and hybrid organizations like labels, which gets my back up when people call UMG a label when they're really a distributor of many labels. Interscope is a label. Republic is a label. And they have a different set of tasks. Now, when UMG got into the dispute with TikTok, it's true that TikTok's essential to a critical part of particularly the developing artist business and communicating with fans, and you have to go where the consumer is. At the same time, TikTok was a relatively small part of the business. So it was a good fight to get into. TikTok has been fairly unreasonable by business practice in terms of what they pay for the use of all this content and drew a hard line. At the same time, each entity the last couple of weeks got into sort of bigger problems. We talked about Taylor Swift and what that meant for UMG and her desire to prioritize getting into TikTok. At the same time, TikTok did the very difficult thing of actually uniting the United States government against them. And they passed a bill that's pretty stringent. And as any of us know, whether it's your local council dealing with a small thing in your apartment or home, or whether it's dealing with the national government, governments have a lot of tools, and it's a big problem for them, and they need to focus on it. So what this inspired was two things. Number one, all of a sudden, in a short period of time, after 3 months of saying, you stink, I'll never do business with you, I'll never bend on this, all of a sudden, both parties had chinks in their armor where TikTok needed to focus on something else. UMG had a restive artist class, it would appear, of their biggest and most important artists. So there was room for a compromise. And secondly, what it made me think of is the importance of partnerships in the music business. And when those things work, when people can align, when you have your missions together, it is a big, complicated, difficult thing to communicate music out to a mass level. And there is a particular proposition that is very seductive and sold, oh, you can do it all yourself. And what I have found in my time, and I've dealt with artists who don't care about the business side of things and artists who are very gifted in the business side of things, is that there is no single in this multidimensional, complicated business that is worldwide. There is no single person in the world that can do everything. And figuring out what is fair compensation for your partners is a legitimate, robust discussion that can require a negotiation, and even reasonable people can disagree about, but they're critical. There isn't any artist, there isn't any creator that on a consistent basis over career can get by doing everything themselves. They are small businesses when they're successful. They employ upwards of dozens of people. They need, on a worldwide basis, a record label or some entity that can manage things, collect their money, make sure people aren't stealing from them, God forbid, promote and market them with some knowledge about the individual markets. And All of these things are complicated and critical for you to have a successful career. The UMG TikTok is a great example of two large entities that, look, in that particular case, I found it ironic because they are the 800-pound gorilla, but I'm very sympathetic to UMG's point. There is an idea that came out of technology that they can just use other people's creations and other people's things as their grist for their mill, and that when they sell the flour, that they don't have to participate at all, or they can make a nominal contribution. And I don't think that's fair or right. And more importantly, it's never existed anywhere in the world, because if you take away fair compensation for the creators and their partners, then there is no ability to create, and then you don't have anything to make your nifty new product. And I thought that battle was won in terms of just a fundamental understanding between technology and music, but sometimes like this, it pops up and it appears it's not.
Yeah, and the noises from Universal were very conciliatory and optimistic on its earnings call that came the same day, serendipitously, the same day as the announcement that Universal and TikTok had kissed and made up. The instant reaction, and I saw this from some cynical voices, it's fair to say, although skeptical of Universal's motives in the independent sector particularly, it would be to assume that Universal had somehow caved or caved on the point, especially when we know that to a degree Taylor Swift debilitated Universal's ability to be strong in the negotiation, because to your point, you were talking about the artist class. We had this discussion recently. What's Billie Eilish going to say in mid-May when she's told you have to keep your stuff off TikTok, but Taylor Swift was allowed to put hers on? It was getting messy. However, when you read what Sir Lucian Grainge says, and they're a publicly traded entity, so he literally cannot lie. I mean, be risking a lot if he was to, so I believe that he wasn't. He lays out a laundry list of what Universal feels it got, and especially in terms of protections around AI content, which has been strong on since the start and mentioned in an open letter in January. It seems to have got pretty much what it wanted there. The big question mark is over the compensation. How big is the check that TikTok's going to write? All we know from Universal is they say that TikTok will be writing a bigger check than it wrote for the last deal. And what they said in January was that TikTok wanted to write a smaller check than it did for the last deal. So it definitely seems to have gone up, but has it gone up by 1%, 5%, 10%? These are things we will never know. And to your point, yes, TikTok had huge leverage as arguably the most relevant social media platform for Gen Z, if we could, certainly over the past couple of years. But at the same time, TikTok is fighting a political battle, a PR battle, and having a cultural juggernaut that, yes, is, strictly speaking, has its financial headquarters, if you like, in Amsterdam. But Universal's real headquarters, its operational headquarters, is slap bang in Santa Monica. And having that kind of company come round, put its arm around your shoulder and say, we're with you, I think will be very valuable as a soft power for TikTok. So this was a more complicated balance of power than I think people like to paint.
I agree 100%. And it's all true. And it's like it was the timing of these things can't be controlled by either party to a certain extent. Taylor puts a stick in the ground for when her album's going to be out. It may cause some fissures in the alliance on the UMG side. Certainly, TikTok doesn't control the calendar of the United States government, and it's a really big deal of what they've got going after them now, and they've got the fight of their life. You can put whatever adjective you want on it, but if they are wiped out of the largest and most lucrative market that they have, when they're already losing money every year, I don't believe they've delivered a profit yet, it is critical, and MySpace at one time was dominant, just to call on those hoary old days. But it's like, ask the guys behind MySpace if they might have done something different in their negotiations at the time, or mp3.com, or a long list. Yes, they have a great algorithm. And yes, they are the bee's knees in key sectors right now, but that has tended not to remain the same for a very long period of time. And if they're injured by this, or if they're distracted and their content's a little weaker, it doesn't sound like a good proposition for them in operating their business.
Yep, fully agree. We could talk more and more about Universal TikTok, because as I said, it was a multifaceted announcement. Universal talked about AI protections, just generally for the public on TikTok, deep fakes, and of course, compensation. But we must move on, because the arbitrary rule I've put on this podcast, which we shall be sticking to, is that we will talk about two topics each week. The topic I want to bring up and chatter about for a little while here is a story that was in, you'll have to forgive me and apologies for these publications, because I can't remember if it was in The Verge or in TechCrunch. I know they both reported it. So whichever one reported it first, I think it was The Verge, that Spotify is moving its lyrics function behind a quote unquote paywall, or behind a making it a premium only feature. So you're on Spotify, you're on the ad-free tier. What it looks like is you will no longer be able to access the lyrics of the music that you are listening to. You will only be able to access those via the premium tier. This number of things come to mind. First of all, there is actually a third party that provides all the lyrics to Spotify called Music's Match. And congratulations to them on becoming so integral, clearly so integral to Spotify's business model. That partnership will now surely only strengthen. I find that very interesting. But the wider point here for me is that Spotify for so long has been criticized by the record industry behind the scenes, however we want to put it, for giving away too much for free and giving users too much of a frictionless experience on the ad-funded side. It's the carrot and stick argument. There isn't enough stick to get them to the premium side. That's what a lot of people in music rights holders have told me over the years. That coincides really with this slowdown, particularly in the US market, of effectively available new subscribers. So yes, there's a new generation coming through, and if they're not subscribed at the minute, or if they're on their parents' family plan, etc., they may become target net new subscribers in the years ahead. But if you just look at the RIAA stats, which I have been doing before this podcast, but roughly speaking, 2019 to 2020, the total number of paying music streaming subscribers in the US grew by 15 million, 2019 to 2020. But fast forward to 2022 to 2023, we're looking at around 5. So it's about a third of the size of year-on-year growth that we saw in 2019. So basically, the market is becoming saturated. There are only so many subscribers to go around, and there are only so many people willing to pay for music at this point. So I do think that we need a bit more stick as well as carrot. And I think taking things away from free users on Spotify and moving to them to the premium tier is an entirely sensible strategy for the music industry at large and for Spotify itself. Secondly, there is someone who will remain nameless. One day he may out himself in this point of view, but he is a leader in the modern music industry of a very substantial company. And his view is, in the US market particularly, Spotify should probably move to a Sirius type arrangement, whereby, if I understand this correctly, Charlie, and of course, as I said before, you were in California, so you can tell me if I get this wrong, but you can buy a car, and you are told you get 6 months of Sirius free, and you drive that car around and you love free Sirius for 6 months so much, and then they just take it away from you unless you agree to pay. And I do think that Spotify is arguably, and others, but particularly Spotify, is giving away too much for free at a time when the music industry is finding new subscribers hard to come by. And I find this news about the lyrics being put behind the paywall actually, from a business perspective, a positive move towards the rebalancing of carrot and stick.
I would agree with you. Look, it unquestionably is, and there's two aspects to it. There's the growth for growth's sake versus managing a now substantial business with investors who then are looking to be paid. There's that. There's also the point that it's 100% true, whether or not the SiriusXM model is it. It's absolutely true that a generous free gets you to fall in love with the product, and it's about value. It's to prove to you that it has a value of $10 a month, $15 a month, $4 a month, whatever it may be, is a much easier sales proposition than getting you to just lay down your credit card and pay for something just on the promise of a conversation. And it was been a very successful for SiriusXM for a long period of time. And somebody is going to come up with that combination of a actual profitable business, which SiriusXM is and has been for a long time, and a bolt-on internet-delivered free product that entices you to sample it and then ultimately fall in love with it and find that it fits your needs. And there is a proposition in there. Clearly, it has value to people. But what that is, it remains in question when Spotify is now transitioning, to my mind, from growth for growth's sake to an existing large business that needs to be managed so that the people who've spent all the money to allow them to create this thing actually have a return.
I guess the next step on in this conversation, which I'm going to wrap us up, but the next step on in this conversation is maybe Spotify ends up with three tiers, and indeed has a free tier that has limited perks and or time limited perks, a la SiriusXM. Then it has a premium tier as we know it today, which has music on it and, of course, audiobooks following our discussion last week and all the fun and games going on around that. But maybe it has a super premium tier whereby they bring in high definition audio and they bring in other perks. This is something that Universal Music Group, Sir Lucian Grange, the CEO and chairman of Universal Music Group, and Michael Nash, who heads up digital globally for Universal, they were both talking on Universal's earnings call about how they've seen research where 1 in 5 consumers, I don't know if it was 1 in 5 current subscribers, I think it was 1 in 5 music fans, let's say, would be willing to pay extra for some kind of super premium tier. I think there's a lot of logic in that. I think, funnily enough, the guys, I think they were called WIMP, W-I-M-P in Scandinavia, who were the original Tidal, that's who Jay-Z bought the Tidal platform from. I believe that their original marketing plan for Tidal was very much the kind of the streaming service for, particularly for gentlemen. And the reason I'm saying gentlemen is because it was very male-oriented marketing, GQ style, you might say. But for the elite gentlemen was what they were going for. If you care about your designer slacks and your BMW, then this is the streaming service for you and it's worth it. And that's all about your own identity. That's all about thinking, well, I wouldn't subscribe to the same streaming service as just anyone, the pedestrian one. I need a special one because that's how I view myself. All of this psychological elements come into it. So I do think they're onto something. It's not only people who truly adore music and would like to hear it in high quality. There are all sorts of factors as to why you could upsell a certain audience and a minority audience into a super premium tier, and you could have those 3 tiers. Anyway, that we can dig into another day, Charlie. I've spoken too much about it already, but we can revisit the topic next time. Charlie Datchery, thank you very much for joining me, and thank you for listening to Talking Trends.